Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And on The Stack, we talk about a couple of books that have come out this week. We review them, we lay out our opinions, and we are raw and honest about everything.
Yes. We do not suffer fools on this podcast. No.
No. Well, let's talk about the first book that I loved. Fantastic Four, number 35 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, Jason Liu, and Mark Waid. Art by John Romita Jr., Jason Liu, and Paul Renaud. In this issue, we get three stories for the Fantastic Four's enormous anniversary. And, you know, you said this on the live show, and I think this perfectly encapsulates it. Almost nobody is better at bringing the history, complicated history, of characters together than Dan Slott. And this first story, which finds the Fantastic Four going up against Kang and all of his different iterations throughout history. Of course, Rama Tut, the Egyptian version of Kang, was one of the first villains the Fantastic Four went up against, so it makes a lot of sense. But just great. Just filled me with so much joy reading this. Honestly, one of the best Fantastic Four stories I've read in a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, what I love about it is Dan Slott knows the history of these characters so well and is not afraid to shy away from, like, the pathos of it. Like, I feel like Ben Grimm really goes through it here. You get to see Johnny Storm being mean to Ben Grimm throughout this, and there's a little through line there. And then we end up with sort of the love of family, and the family does take care of each other no matter what the circumstances are. What I especially loved about this is just seeing all the different iterations of Fantastic Four that we've seen over the year, because reading this, I was like, oh, right, Ben Grimm wore a mask for a long time. Johnny was dead for a while, and that got me thinking about, like, oh, Johnny dated Alicia for a long time, and then it was revealed that she was a Skrull, and, like, you just start to spin on all the crazy iterations. The new Fantastic Four, which was, like, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, all these other characters that were just popular then. There's been so much here, and to get just a light touch on all of it was really cool.
So that story was great. One other thing that I'll actually mention about it is they break up the different Kangs attacking the Fantastic Four throughout history with throwback comic book covers, and that's really yes. fun in and of itself. Really enjoyed that. But the backup story by Jason Liu is very good and weird as they fight Mole Man yet again. And the Mark Waid story is pretty good, too. It's basically him reiterating Fantastic Four's origin story, but with a few more modern flair to it, and I thought that was really solid as well. So overall, just a really, really good package, and I was very happy with this book.
Yeah,
really. Let's move on and talk about Rorschach, number 12 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Jorge Fornes. This is the final issue of this book, tying everything up with a nice, neat bow, no questions whatsoever at the end of the day. Now, I think both of us have been very positive on this book, but what did you think about this last issue, and what did you think about the run in total?
I like the tension of this. Like, it definitely, if we're charting the stakes and tension of this book over the series, like, it really ratchets up over the course of it to the point where we're here and what happens. I don't want to spoil too much of it here, but it's really well paced. We get just focusing on the images of the tape recorder as that changes at the very end, I thought was awesome. And we don't find out really what happened. We're meant to infer some things, which I thought was actually cool. Because I think we're left with the same feeling that we would have had if the story was explicitly told what actually happened. I think we know that the villain, the villains in this issue are the villains. We know that our main reporter character is the one who's trying to reconcile all of this, and he does. So in that, I feel like it's more of like a tonal comic about Rorschach rather than what you might expect of, like, this is a Rorschach story where Rorschach's putting on his mask and solving a mystery.
Yeah, you might even say you see in it whatever you want to see in it and
holy
take away whatever you want to take.
Oh my God. Oh wow. I got to think about this for a
The art from Jorge Fortis is great here. The layouts amazing. Are amazing. Like you mentioned, without getting into spoilers, the tape recorder sequence and the way that it turns is incredible. But the big question with any project like this is, does it justify its existence? I know we've potentially passed that Rubicon already because we've talked about Before Watchmen and how some of those books are really good. We talked about Doomsday Clock. We've watched the Watchmen TV show and all of these other things. So certainly we're past the point where the question is, should they do a Watchmen sequel project? But the question, I think, every time out of the gate is still going to be, does this deserve to have existed in the wake of Watchmen? I would say yes, for the same reasons that I liked a lot of the Before Watchmen series, which is, it's really well written. The art is really good. Did it need to exist? Probably not, but it does. So I'm going to enjoy it for what it is. But curious to hear what your take is, Justin.
Well, I think I would strike a difference between the Before Watchmen books and this, because the Before Watchmen books felt like they were chasing up some plot with some light theme extensions of Watchmen and sort of being like, look, here's a little bit more information. When this book, it seems very specifically to be like, hey, here are some of the ideas of Watchmen, and specifically the Rorschach character who was so black and white when it came to justice and like someone needs to suffer for this crime, and updating that to our modern political world. When we talked about on our Watchmen podcast, based on the Watchmen TV show, Watchmen Watch, we talked a lot about how the politics of Rorschach specifically are different now. Like, it feels like that conspiracy-laden mind really feels like something that has metastasized and has become a major problem in our current culture and politics. And so to sort of look at that and then write this book, I think Tom King is trying to make a whole new statement that you can't be, Rorschach doesn't work anymore. You can't be black and white in this world. And so you have this character of the reporter who's going through and trying to sift through a mystery that is too convoluted and has too many tentacles to really finish. And he ends up making a choice that is a very Rorschach choice in a world that doesn't really work anymore. And I think it sort of breaks him by the end. And the aftermath of what happens in this book, you sort of see this person that has almost become that Rorschach person where it's like, I can't exist in society, so I'm going to exist on the fringes.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
Cool. Primordial. No, I agree. I think you encapsulated it really well. And I think that's well said and well thought out. I ultimately think it's going to be interesting to maybe revisit this in a couple of years and see how it works outside of the monthly comic book type paradigm.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, overall, I think, like I said, I think they are successful at what they set out to do. Primordial number one from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino. I love this book too. I'm almost hesitant to talk about it all, except that it clearly exists in an alternate reality where the space programs have been shut down right after they sent animals into space. We kind of find out why by the end of the issue here, but it takes some wild turns, and the art's gorgeous, of course. The writing's great. Like most Jeff Lemire stuff, it's a heavy sci-fi idea with a light touch is what it feels like, and I really enjoy that quite a bit.
That's a cool way of saying it. I mean, Jeff Lemire, it's great to just see a new Jeff Lemire book out there on the stands, and this one has some good, it reminds me a little bit of Department of Truth in the way it's sort of like, aha, did you notice this is what is happening in this comic? And some mystery is set up. We don't know too much about what's happening. This reminds me of a sort of more modern version of Ex Machina. If you remember the Brian K. Vaughan book, which was getting some shit this week. About its very sort of blunt take on September 11th and a superhero book where the whole premise was like, what if a superhero stopped one of the towers from falling on September 11th? And there's a whole big political take on that. And I feel like that was not fair to Brian K. Vaughan. It was taking a book that existed at a time where we were just a simpler people when it came to what was happening both politically and with what everyone was creating at that time, and try to judge it through a modern lens, which I was like, get out of here with that. It's just, it's like why The Last Man in the same, everyone's lumping on Brian K. Vaughan right now. And I feel like,
if you want to lump on Brian K. Vaughan for anything, talk about his TV work, which has not been great. His comic book work is excellent.
Wow. Sorry, interesting he wrote take from, just a, fine. From a Lost fan. From a Lost
he
fan
didn't already. Add anything to that show.
Oh, Alex, you must be two drinks in because you're saying some crazy shit right now.
I'm just telling the truth. I'm like Rorschach right now.
Oh, nice. Cool.
You know who's also telling the truth is I Am Batman, number one from DC Comics, written by John Ridley, art by Olivier Coppel. This is picking up off of the Batman Future State here, where we get this new Batman, more political Batman. And this is good. It continues to be good, as the other John Ridley Batman stuff has been. But the standout for me here is Olivier Coppel's art. Seeing him on this Batman is gorgeous.
Agree completely. The art is fantastic. This is a very... This is like a prestige Batman book, and I feel like we don't quite have a handle on this Batman yet. It does feel like the Ridley book from Future State. It's that again, but this Batman, I'm curious how he will confront more of the sort of Batman world. We're just sort of getting a sense of him. He feels like he's very prepared. And we get a great breakdown of sort of the new tech that he's using, which I thought was very cool. I'm into this. I want to see where it goes.
I also think, frankly, not to keep lumping on stuff, but I feel like they did a better job in this book of giving us a Batman who has limited resources than the current plot of Batman who has limited resources, who still seems to be able to do most of the things Batman does, except talk about, ooh, I just don't have the same amount of money. I only have millions of dollars and all of my friends who have unlimited resources. That's it.
My favorite part about Batman is hearing about how his finances are doing. Mm-hmm. I just want to get a Bruce Wayne stock ticker.
Just give me an Excel spreadsheet in comic book form and I'm a happy camper. Let's move on to
comics is spreadsheets.
Let's talk about Eternals Thanos Rises, number one, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Dustin Weaver. This is a surprising spinoff of the Eternals book, I guess, because they have a different artist on this one. That's probably why that's going on. But it gives us an origin and revamped backstory for Thanos, or at least for Thanos' daddy. We find out a lot about him in this book.
And Thanos does call him daddy a lot.
Yes. No doubt. And a tease of how that potentially is going to affect the Eternals book itself. I still thought this was really good. What about you?
I agree. It was a lot of Eternals business, especially in sort of the front half, which I was like, cool, it makes sense. Kieran Gillen loves to really expand the stories he's telling sort of to the sides. Once we got into the love story and the consequences of that from Thanos' quote-unquote parents, I really liked that. And I'm curious, this puts Thanos at the very sort of center of the Eternals book, which I think when I was reading the earlier issues of the Eternals book, I was like, oh, that's a fun way to inject this character we know from the Marvel Universe into Eternals, which we don't know. But here it does sort of earned that center space in the book. And I thought this backstory it's essential reading for the Eternals series. I was surprised to see that it was in this standalone issue.
I agree. Now, Justin, do you ever wish you could just snap your fingers and wipe out half the pubes in the universe?
Because that's what I do at home.
And, oh, do you?
I keep getting a bunch of pube Avengers who stop me from doing it. They fight me back and reverse the snap.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is endgame for your pubes with Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0. It's like the infinity gauntlet of grooming products because it brings together so many different things. With the Performance Package, you're going to get
Tell
the
us about this, the six stones of the
of You got the lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. Wait, I should probably say, like, the lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is kind of like the space stone, right? The weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, sort of like the power stone. Crop preserver ball deodorant, definitely the reality stone.
Because there's a reality you got to deal with, kid.
The crop reviver toner, time stone. Revive, yep. Time Stone,
Revive.
Right?
Exactly.
Performance back. Boxer briefs. I don't remember which stones I've said already. And of course, you get a travel bag to hold everything all in, which is very cool. That's like the Infinity Gauntlet there.
I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed there were six things, and that's why I said that.
Yeah, I definitely forgot one of the stones. Nobody called me out on it.
Do you mean me? By nobody, do you mean me?
Yep.
I would never call out my fellow Thanks host so and friend. Alexander Zalbin.
Really appreciate that. Now, just to mention a couple of things about these different Infinity Stones, as we were mentioning, the fourth generation trimmer includes a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Like I always say, you should have gone for the head, right? Well, in this case,
right.
you don't have, you can go that. For the head, but you'll be safe because you got the skin safe technology. And the Lawnmower 4.0 is a 7,000 RPM motor, a multifunction on-off switch, and a travel lock. So if you're going across the universe to go to Earth to complete your Infinity Stones for your performance package, you can bring it right with you, and it's very cool.
It's very cool. Keep your stones safe with Manscaped.com. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at Manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond... This makes sense now. Your space balls will thank you.
Let's move on and stop blowing wind out of our ass and instead talk about Win number 10 for Boob Studios, written by James Tynan. Number four.
Jesus I think that's Christ. What I think that's what James Tynan wrote for copy for us to say. Let's quit blowing wind out of your ass and let's talk about wind.
Art by Michael Dialidis. This is the end of the second book of Wind, this all-ages title that is surprisingly dark and bloody, as our main character discovers some new powers and gets a little bit of a new love. I felt like this arc as a whole was maybe not quite as strong as the first arc, even though I still really liked it, but I do think it came together really nicely in this last issue. What was your take?
I agree with that take. It felt a little scattershot and sort of introducing these horror elements. We have the vampires. This had sort of a werewolf vibe to this issue a bit for Wind. But I do think it may be that the tone of this book is a little different than we thought. It felt up until this arc like it was sort of a focused fantasy story. And this feels like it's actually much broader and like sort of reaching into other genres in a way that I didn't expect, at least. But I liked the way it came together at the end, sort of a sweet moment for our main characters. And I'm curious, especially because of what I said, how this world will expand into the next step. Like, what's the move here?
Let's talk about another ending, Wonder Woman number 779 from DC Comics, written by Michael W. Conrad and Becky Cloonan and Jordi Belair, art by Travis Moore and Paulina Ganacho. This is the end of this run that we have been loving with Wonder Woman as she travels through different afterlives following Janice, this villain who's been split from her better half.
Janice from Friends.
Yes, from Friends. Matthew Perry's character.
That is
Chandler,
what she said.
Chandler Bing.
No,
there we go.
No, that's what she said, Matthew Perry's character.
Anyway, this was great. I was so bummed that this was the last issue here because they have been killing it on this title, but I think this tied up so nicely, and this really, in my mind, is a iconic Wonder Woman run that I would put up with almost anything else.
I agree with you. Like, it was this... As soon as I, like, three pages into this book, I was like, oh, this is the end. You can feel the story wrapping up. You can feel all the characters being like, okay, bye. I'm all dead man being like, I'm pretty much done here, I guess. And to as it got to the end and have her say goodbye to these characters that I thought were really great additions to the Wonder Woman canon, and I would hope that we get to see more of them. I'm going to miss Wonder Woman being able to just explore different worlds, and because I feel like she gets a little stuck in a lot of the runs over the past few years on just regular superhero DC Earth. So I hope she can still bounce out and get into some places where she doesn't quote unquote belong, because though that felt especially fresh in this run.
I agree. Next up, Ma, number one from Boom Studios, written by Jude Ellison S. Doyle, art by A.L. Kaplan. This is about a bunch of women that head to a retreat that's even weirder and more deadly than Nine Perfect Strangers and the strange things that happen there. To be honest, did not quite get what was going on in this book. I don't think we're totally meant to at this point. But I do think the art was very good, and that kept me intrigued enough to potentially check out a second issue. How about you?
I'll go even further than you, because I agree the art was good. You don't quite know what is happening at this retreat. It feels like it's a larger sort of fantastical element we're going to get to. I'm surprised we didn't get any shades of it here in this first issue. But I really like the characters. I thought the two main characters were really interesting. A lot of bad stuff happens in this issue. And I was surprised it ended on such a sort of downbeat for them. I wanted to get a little bit of a springboard into, like, this bad shit happened to us, to her, and she is going to move in this direction, or she's being swept up in this thing that will take her to a new place. Instead, it was just like, nope, here's where we are. But again, the art was really cool, and I'll definitely pick up the second issue, if nothing else, just to answer sort of the questions I have.
Titans United, number one from DC Comics, written by Kevin Scott, art by Jose Luis and Jonas Trinidad. This is a pretty straightforward Titans adventure, bringing together the original Titans to fight some sort of new bad. We don't know exactly what it is, but it's somebody who is powering up people and supervillains and maybe some heroes. I guess we'll have to see. But this feels like a nice, solid, classic Titans adventure. Thoughts? I don't know. This is Titans as a whole is not exactly my thing. So I read this and I was like, yes, this is correct.
Because you wish they were teens.
Yeah.
You prefer. You don't like when little kids grow up?
If they were like Teen Titans Go, I'd be into that.
Nice. I really like the Superboy here, and he's definitely a focus. I'm curious what it felt like, a very simple, like, oh, this person has powers and they're trying to solve to help them. And then it sort of started to spin in different directions. The last page reveal was a fun surprise for me with the characters they including I'll mention the villain, Kite Man. Doesn't really appear very often outside of a very specific Batman run by Tom King. So it's cool to see him here juiced up. These characters, we don't get a lot of time with any of them. Mm-hmm. And this is a limited series. So I don't know. I'm curious what the focus is going to be for this. It feels like Connor maybe, but I'm not sure.
Well, I think that's what I'm getting at, is it feels very focused towards, oh, you know these characters. You know the Titans. Here's an adventure with them. Enjoy. And that's totally fine. But that is not my favorite mode of storytelling. I think that's sort of, you know, playing to the crowd that's coming out and doing an encore. And some people love that. I would love to see something a little fresh and new. But if you are a Titans fan, I do think you're going to be very pleased by this. Next up, something completely, totally opposite. Maneaters, The Curse, number three from Dark Horse Comics, written by Chelsea Kane, art by Liam Mitternick. This, I know how to describe this, but I don't even know how to describe this exactly in the context of the book, which ostensibly is about a bunch of kids that go to a craft camp. The craft camp turns out to actually be witchcraft camp. All of the kids go missing. Two of the kids are looking for them, including the one boy who went to camp and had no idea. He thought it was just actually craft camp. And throughout both of those first two issues, there were fun little bits where they would have badges you could cut out or little quizzes they might take at the camp. This is straight up a magazine about the camp and everything that's happened there, with none of the characters, just articles and ads and letter pages and op-eds and things like that. This is great. I love that they did this. I also cannot believe that this actually came out as a monthly comic book.
Yes, and I'll one-up you and say, I can't believe this is the third issue of this comic.
Yes.
This feels like an issue that comes out, like issue 7. Your six-issue arc finishes, and you're like, let's have some fun. Let's open up the world a little bit and give people like just fun, funny issue that goes in a bunch of different directions. And instead, this is the third issue. And I will say, this comic has been very coy with its information. So the fact that we're getting this world-expanding issue is actually helpful now. Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised that we don't see any of our main characters. And we see a lot of funny, very specific 1980s ads for that I read when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, in your we had a catalog of, like, something like the most incredible things you've never heard of. And it was a bunch of like goofy, like prank plastic stuff you could buy, and it got to your house and it was broken. We ordered liquid smoke out of it when I was a kid and literally ruined a rug that changed our lives because our parents were so mad at us for doing that. And this was full nostalgia feelings here. So this is a great book to just read if you're a comic book fan from back in the day.
Yeah, this book, just in general, is so, so good, and everybody should be reading it. But as you mentioned, this is a wild, wild third issue. Next up, Wakanda, The Last Annihilation, number one from Marvel, written by Evan Narcisse, art by Jermaine Peralta. This book, as you could probably figure out, it's all the characters involved in Wakanda who are dealing with the problem of Dormammu has created a giant pentagram in space. This, I really feel like I'm being very negative this week. This was kind of a mess, it felt like to me. Like, I love this idea that Dormammu has created a pentagram in space and just letting demons out in space. So cool, so much fun. I don't know what was going on in this issue.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, I think. Yeah. And this was sort of scooping up a lot of Black Panther continuity from the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, from some earlier runs. We get Storm and T'Challa here, and their sort of relationship and post-relationship, all of Storm. Everyone loves Storm, which has got to be weird for T'Challa to be like, she's technically my ex. I don't know what...
They exes? Have they even specified exactly what happened with them?
Well, they definitely did break up. I don't know what their status is, I guess, right now, maybe. But they do feel close. And, like, I appreciate that. I love the line over in the course of this issue, the moon is has gone mindless, I think it was, or something like that. Which I was like, yeah, a bunch of mindless ones take over the moon and make the moon itself a mindless one? Awesome. So I think for me, this book has a lot of big ideas, but it felt a little bit like the narrative thread got lost over the course of it. But I appreciated a lot of what was happening.
Yeah, that I think you're absolutely right with that. There were individual things, like there was a lot of stuff with M'Baku that was sort of the emotional thread of the book, which I thought was very good and very well done. I did love the moon is mindless thing, but it was so packed with narration and dialogue that it was sometimes hard to parse through exactly what was going on with the action. But I am still very interested to see how this wraps up. Next up, Bermuda number 3 from IDW, written by John Layman, art by Nick Bradshaw. This is continuing a journey through this strange, weird other land featuring this character, Bermuda, who is a kick-ass girl teaming up with a boy who is trying to find his sister. They may or may not be opening a portal to another world. This continues to be a lot of fun, and Nick Bradshaw is drawing the crap out of it.
Yeah, great Nick Bradshaw art. The story is fun, and sort of like the last book, there is so much going on here. I'm surprised the next issue is sort of the wrap-up.
Yeah.
Because there's been so much established, so many different factions on the island. I gotta think they're gonna bring this back for more. I would just expect to have another arc coming almost immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. I assume we'll get Bermuda 2 or something like that following up on this. But this is a lot of fun. I do really like the designs. Like you talked about, there's a lot of different things going on. But I think that's part of the cheeky appeal for me a little bit is John Layman
cheeky.
Well, he's throwing in all these ideas like, whoa, now there's mermen and they're riding on space seagulls. And also
a portal. The portal was not, I didn't see a portal coming. And then we get a strong portal at the end.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm having a lot of fun reading that one. Another one that I'm having fun reading, but I want maybe a little bit more from, is Superman and the Authority number 3 from DC Comics, written by Grant Morrison, art by Mikel Janin and Travel Foreman. Here we finally have our team assembled. This is Superman. He's very specific. They're not Black Ops. They're Ops. They're out in the open. But it still seems a little vague exactly what Superman wants from them and what he wants them to do on purpose. He hasn't given them their full mission yet, but they are coming together as a team now and they're fighting on a bunch of different fronts. This felt the most Grant Morrison-y of the issues to me just because so many different things were happening at the same time. But the art continues to be very, very good.
Yes, I agree. I know it's funny. We talked about how the getting the team together issue last issue felt a little surprising coming from Grant Morrison as like, oh, wow, he's really hitting the formula of a comic book here. And I think that's why, especially this issue, was like, nope, I'm not doing that, in fact. So it did feel a little bit of a surprising little bit. But I don't know, I guess to what you were saying, I don't know where the move is here.
Right.
What is this book?
Yeah, where does it end up? There's so many different things happening with Superman at this point. What is the goal here? And we know there is a goal, but I guess at this point we don't know exactly what it is. And hey, we'll find out maybe in the next issue. I guess we'll see what happens. That's how comics work.
And I think it's working on us because we're like, oh, this is cool. The art's cool. I don't know what's happening. I guess I'll buy another one.
Homesick Pilots, number 9 from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Casper Wingard. In this issue, I keep wanting to say our bad guy, haunted house, blood suit bearer, but she's not even a bad guy. She's just the opposing party has figured out where the main haunted house that she's gunning for is. Things go horribly wrong at her compound, and this is great. Every issue is great. The end.
Every issue is great. And this is a book that is sort of like, it's a ghost book. And they're like, ah, no, it's sort of a Voltron situation. And it's like, nope, it's a kaiju book. And then it's like, ah, no, it's just like Ocean's 11, but for ghost objects. It's like, no, it's also this. So we're cycling through a lot of genre moves, and it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly why. And we get just more interesting information here. It's like, Salt beats ghosts, and it's about controlling the right ghosts and hearing the little ghost stories individually. Everything in this book is working, and it doesn't seem like it should be.
Well, I think part of it is getting to what we've been talking about with a lot of these books in the stack today is Casper Wingard's art is so clear in the layouts and the explanation of what's happening. You could have things that could be total messes as you have protoplasm flying everywhere and blood suits and salt pills and things like that. But it's always clear what is going on in every single scene. And that helps tremendously in terms of reading the book.
Yeah. And we keep getting little nods like, oh, we want to integrate ghosts into human culture. And it's like, wait, what? That's a huge idea to just casually drop. And maybe that's what this book is at the end of the day.
Yeah. Next up, The Joker, number 7 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Sam Johns, art by Gillam March and Sweetie Boo. In this issue, we don't even see the Joker at any point. It's just Commissioner Gordon, maybe making a new romance with Madame Halloween. No way that can go wrong.
Exactly. When I meet someone and they tell me their name is Madame Halloween, I'm like, oh, perfectly normal conversation we're about to have. No questions.
Yes, but we also get Julia Pennyworth is back at this issue in the most fun way possible. It's wild that this is a Joker book that the Joker barely appears in.
Well, with jokes, you want to take a break and have a setup and before you get to the punchline. And maybe we're getting a long setup out of the way.
No, punchline is the backup story.
Ah, I see. It was a lowercase p punchline.
Oh, okay.
But I do like this book, and the way that I feel like the sands in the hourglass of James Tynion's DC work are just really running out here quickly. So to take in the writing in this book, which really is telling a multi-tiered story, James Gordon's story, sort of the larger overarching story of what this means for everybody, and like the Joker side of the story that, like you said, we're not really getting in Joker's head at the same time is a skill, and James Tynion is great at it.
Next up, Seven Secrets, number 12 from Boom Studios, written by Tom Taylor, art by Danielle DiNicolo. In this issue, our bad guys are making some big moves, but so are our good guys. I think this book works best when it refocuses on the main character instead of everything else that's going on, because it's a little hard to keep track of all the different moves that are happening between these different organizations. But at the end here, we get a big move on the main mythology, focusing on our main character, the one that we've been following since issue one. And that's the part where the book really lit up for me and got me excited for the next issue. How are you feeling about this so far?
Stuff keeps happening in this book, and I like the moments, but I don't know what is overarching. There are too many secrets.
Yeah.
There are too many secrets in this book. There's seven. Doesn't feel like a lot of secrets. Too many.
Yeah. We know two now.
Yep.
Kind
but
of.
if you were like, name the secrets, I'd be like, I don't know, a guy flew a little bit?
No, that's not the secret. One of the secrets is they open a suitcase and it takes out a country.
Yes.
And another one shows them three possible futures, I think.
Yes, but I would argue, like, we don't know what the secret was that destroyed Switzerland.
It was a suitcase. No, we don't know what the secret is. The secret is countries get destroyed.
Yeah, that's not a secret. That's a consequence. This isn't seven consequences.
What if I said it like this? Countries get destroyed.
Oh, interesting. Secrets are often whispered. I'll give you mm-hmm. that. I want more clarity in this book. It's starting to get hard to enjoy because I feel like there's so much happening behind mm-hmm. my back, and I keep looking around and I'm not able to get my hands on it.
Fair enough. Next up, The Scumbag, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Rick Mender, art by Mateus Bergara. In this issue, we're wrapping up our storyline that's been going on, where there was accidentally a perfect world created and then absolutely ruined by our main scumbag character and turned into Scumbag World. He put together a team of reprobates to take the fight to them. They don't have superpowers, so they get destroyed absolutely instantly. Very fun issue, very sad issue at the same time.
Well, I liked the reprobate stuff because I like how seriously they take themselves. They take themselves like an epic team of Avengers, and they are just instantly dispatched. I thought that was really fun. This felt like Rick Remender just going through and sort of making fun of comic book culture a little bit mm-hmm. and then expanding that sort of parody laser gun and aiming it at just sort of larger culture. Like, we find out that Scumbag's parents are just like a regular couple, and he's upsetting expectation in a fun way. The Scumbag, who we've believed to be a hero, really undercuts that in this issue in a way that we're like, oh, that's too bad. But it's like, wait, he's the Scumbag. Of course he's going to do something like that. And I think Rick Remender is just so good at toggling our expectations mm-hmm. in that way. And there's a new Rick Remender book coming out soon.
Wow.
Did you see that advertised in the back?
I did. Guy's a machine.
He keeps coming up with stuff. And the fact that this one feels like it's going to be specifically dealing with some bad regular life stuff feels mm-hmm. like it's a Rick Remender book that may be the commentary that I've been looking for. Because the book is called A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance. The powerful are used to getting away with everything, coming in October. Okay. Feels like this is going to be sort of an angry book from Rick Remender, which I'm excited about.
Last but not least, Ninjak, number 3 from Valiant Comics, written by Jeff Parker, art by Javier Pulido. This is continuing our adventures with Ninjak. The main draw for me here is Javier Pulido's art, which is absolutely awesome. His layouts are great across the board. I want more of this. This comic feels too short while you're reading it is my big problem.
Yeah, this feels like such a strong take on Ninjak. It feels like we're setting up Ninjak to be this sort of James Bond character. We get all these great visuals and Ninjak jumping around through different parts of this world, secret organizations, new weaponry. It's fun. And the Javier Pulido art is fantastic.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the virtual comic book shop.
And the real one. Look for us. We're there.
We're already there. Comic Book Club.